You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jad Abumrad here sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I am happy to have as my first guest Brian Greene, the very talented explainer of complicated physics, maybe the only person I know who can make quantum mechanics even 5% understandable. Brian Greene is the author of a pair of best-selling books, The Fabric of the Cosmos and The Elegant Universe. And today we're going to talk not so much about Brian and your books, although that would be great for any other day, but more about your very ambitious latest project, which is the World Science Festival, which begins today and for the next 4 days will pretty much take over the city. Hello?
Hi.
So I'm curious about the World Science Festival. Before we talk about where you came up with the idea, what is it exactly?
Well, it's 40 events that will take place across 22 venues throughout New York City that really aim to help the general public realize that science isn't intimidating, isn't something that just makes your head hurt. It's something that's really inspirational, exciting, wondrous. Our goal is to just help people connect or reconnect with science. So many people leave it behind in the classroom. It was a difficult class, and then they let it go. Our view is science is a way of life. It's a perspective, and it's as important as music and literature and art, and these events are meant to try to show that.
I imagine that endeavor to take the fear out of science might be one that is particularly close to you, because you're dealing with string theory, you're dealing with quantum mechanics. How important is that?
Hugely. I mean, my research is in areas that people typically do find the most difficult to understand. I find it difficult to understand. We've been working on these subjects for a long time and we're making progress, but it's tough.
Yeah.
But the great thing is people can get excited about the journey of science, about the exploration of science. So much science is often taught as it's in the textbook and it's done and it's finished. The journey is really where the wonder of science is, and these events are really trying to show the narrative, the dramatic story of discovery that we as a species have been on for millennia.
So how did you come up with the idea? Was this something you cooked up, or did it bump into you?
It bumped into me partly. I was asked to give a talk at a science festival in Genoa, Italy, by a great man, Vittorio Bo, who also publishes my books in Italian, so I felt a certain need to go. And when I went, I went with Tracy Day, who turned out to be the executive director of the festival, and we decided to do our own. But we were standing there in the square in Genoa, and to see science spilling out from these old buildings into this square, and people so excited about science, we stood there and said, wow, if we could do this in New York.
What was it about was it the street levelness of it?
No, it was really just a sense that people often are so excited about the new film or the new theater or perhaps a new book, but people were talking about science.
Yeah.
They were discussing this lecture or that new insight, and it just sort of felt like it was becoming integrated into the culture. I mean, I have a strong sense that people are aware of science, but it's still on the cultural outskirts. People are willing not to look at it. You know, there's a great op-ed by Nicholas Kristof a couple years ago where he was saying that there's a kind of hubris of the humanities. We would be kind of shocked if in quote-unquote educated circles someone said, Shakespeare who? I've never heard of him. Or Picasso,
right.
I don't know. Don't know who that guy is.
No, but it's interesting. There is a sense among normal people, or that's not the right phrase, but people who are not scientists, there's almost a kind of pleasure in sort of looking down. Oh, that's for geeks.
Yeah,
that's
it's like a badge of courage that you don't go near science. And our goal is to show that if you cut science off from your life, you're cutting off something that really is making life less rich. I mean, when I and other scientists, we walk around, the fact that we can look at a wonderful sunset and understand the molecular processes that are giving rise to that rich orange color.
Do you really think about that when you're looking at the sunset?
I do. Sometimes I have to say I don't. So it's not as though it's always, infiltrating on my thoughts. I mean, I can experience the sunset like anybody else, but when I want to, I can look a little bit more deeply. You know, Richard Feynman actually said it even better. He said, when I look at a rose, I see the red color, I smell it, just like everybody else, but I can look deeper and understand the molecular atomic processes give rise to that color and that smell, and it just enhances the experience.
See, that's interesting, because science traditionally seems to suffer from a wet blanket problem, and that you try and take something like a sunset or a rose and you over-explain it, and it becomes simply an equation or a math. And so the experience you're saying of looking at a rose or a sunset is enriching, knowing what goes into that.
Absolutely.
Rose.
There's a wonderful poem by Walt Whitman where he basically highlights that idea, where he speaks about being in a classroom where the learned astronomer is teaching him about the stars. And he's sitting there and he's listening and he just gets up and walks outside and looks up and experiences them. And I understand that well. But if you integrate science into your worldview, it isn't something that is in tension with that experience. It's something that enhances the experience. So in these events at the World Science Festival, we are injecting art and dance and music and film and theater into some of the programming so that people recognize that this isn't an isolated subject. You know, at the Guggenheim Museum, there's a dance piece interpreting quantum gravity. And gravity is critical to dance. It's also critical to my research and those who are working toward a unified theory. So this is a wonderful place of contact between art and science. Alan Alda has written a new work called Dear Albert, where he took the correspondences, the letters of Einstein, and stitched them together into a narrative where you watch Einstein, in his own words, scour to the edge of the cosmos to try to understand relativity while also being brought back to Earth with the problems with his wife and his kids and his colleagues. So it shows that science is deeply integrated into a human life. It's not this separate activity. So, you know, someone who would perhaps run away when they hear Einstein or science might go to this piece of Allen's on Sunday at Miller Theater and really leave with an understanding of science, even though they went for the theater.
Jad Abumrad here, sitting in for Leonard Lope today. This is WNYC and WNYC.org, and my guest is the author and now event planner, Brian Green. Let me ask you this, Brian. Why would you leave the comfort of your writing studio or of the place where you teach and go into the no doubt chaotic, hectic world of dealing with police permits to plan events, scheduling scientists who probably are hard to wrangle? Why would you make that jump? Is it something? Why now, I guess?
Sure. Well, two answers. One, thankfully, I don't have to do those kinds of details. We have a wonderful team of people who are experienced at planning events and all of those logistical aspects, which I would not be good at all. So, you know, spectacular team that's executing it. But in terms of why a festival, because it has occupied a lot of my time thinking about various programs and people and so on, and I think it's just so critical that the general public be willing to engage with science. I mean, we look at the 21st century. And we have such challenges, such opportunities as well. Climate change, stem cells, genomic sequencing, alternate energies, nanotechnology, space travel. I mean, the list is endless. And all of these subjects are fundamentally scientific at their core, but they have tentacles that sort of reach out into the world in a very manifest way. So for the general public to be able to make informed decisions about policy with stem cells or what we should do about global warming, they need to engage with the underlying science. Most people and most conversations in the public sphere quickly leave the science behind and then talk about the implications. We want people to be able to link them up, to be able to really have a sense of what's going on with this particular subject. So it's not just a few people who are informing the public attitude.
I see. And to give me some of the highlights
of the festival.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, Thursday night, tonight, we have a great program, Illuminating Genius, where you have some neuroscientists, V.S. Ramachandran, Nancy Andreasen, David Eagleman, in conversation with artists, Bill T. Jones, Matthew Ritchie, Michael York, and there'll be brain imaging that will be part of this program, and the effort is to see where creativity sits inside the brain. So a very interesting program at the Skirball Center tonight. Tomorrow, I'm doing an event on quantum mechanics. Richard Leakey tomorrow night is doing a great event, The Sixth Extinction, a visceral portrayal of the past, present, and history of life on Earth at Miller Theater. Saturday, Charlie Rose is doing a really exciting program called What It Means to Be Human. And the idea there is science is doing some spectacular things that really affect how we think about ourselves. I mean, if you have brain-machine interface technology, which now exists, if you have the prospect in the future, perhaps not too distant future, of creating life in the laboratory, how does this cutting-edge science affect the uniquely human characteristics that for so long have defined us?
Yeah.
So that conversation with Charlie Rose is again at Skirball on Saturday night.
I see. I wonder if you see a limit to, so much of what you're saying here is about communicating with people and seducing them into a certain appreciation or a certain understanding of science. I wonder if you see a limit to that. I mean, it strikes me that one of the things that happened, I mean, you mentioned relativity. Maybe it was relativity that sort of was the fork in the road. Perhaps it was all gradual. But somewhere along the way, science and common sense kind of parted ways. And you have these strange situations now where if you're moving faster than I am, then time for you is slower than it is for me. And then certainly when you get down to the subatomic level and you understand that protons and or electrons can be in many places at once, is there a limit to how much science can actually explain and communicate that kind of thing? It's just so complicated.
Well, I understand that perspective very well, but I see it pretty much in reverse. Hmm. When science only spoke about the everyday things, it was very interesting and exciting, but it wasn't really taking us to a different place. I find that the new advances, and by new I mean the last 100 years, really, relativity, quantum mechanics, give us this rich reservoir of material that can allow people to realize how exciting and unexpected the world is. I mean, we have a whole kids program at the festival because I have had the experience where I talk to kids who say to me, I don't like science. You know, it's not something that really interests me. And then I tell them about just the things you were mentioning, about relativity, where when you're moving, time elapses at a different rate. I tell them about black holes, where when you're near a black hole, time slows down. I tell them about the Big Bang, where everything in the cosmos was crushed to a tiny scale. I see their eyes light up, and they say, that's science. Yeah, that's science.
What does that mean, that's science?
They're saying, I didn't realize that these kind of spectacularly interesting ideas were what science is about. Because in the classroom, science often focuses on the methods, the techniques of science. Can you do that calculation, solve that equation, balance that reaction, understand those parts of the cell? All very important. But if the kid doesn't see the big picture at the same time, those details just don't feel compelling. So we have this Disney program is coming to the festival where they're going to show the science of imagination on Saturday at Skirball Center, science of pyrotechnics, the science of robotics, roller coasters, animation, virtual reality, things that really can excite kids because they take you to a different place, but there's science behind it. A street fair. A whole day street fair from 10 to 6 on Saturday, May 31st, around Washington Square Park, where kids can come and see dinosaurs walking around and then see how they work. Or they can interact with Miss Frizzle from the Magic School Bus if they're younger, and that really may have excited them.
You actually have the real Miss
Frizzle? Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to define what real means when you're talking about
a sort of
cartoon
McDonald's
character.
I see.
But yeah, there's a character who will be Miss Frizzle, and the Magic School Bus will be there. The Howtoons, Cosmic... A painting of equations and stars and galaxies on kids' faces. So it's a real interactive, wondrous place where kids can just immerse themselves in science for a little while on Saturday.
At the risk of opening a Pandora's box, let me just ask you a question. You mentioned kids and the natural wonder that kids have towards science at a certain age, but there is this thing that happens as a kid becomes an adult. Somewhere along the way, the science becomes about memorizing facts, and it becomes a series of obligations. And you know, it's not the wonder somehow is bled out. Where do we go wrong?
Well,
in your opinion?
Well, typically you can even quantify it. You know, it's like fourth, fifth, sixth grade is where there's a turning away from science.
I have a theory, by the way.
Oh, do you?
The Krebs cycle is my theory.
That could be it. Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly part of it. But you know, the way I see it is, it's really the burden of our educational system that doesn't nurture that scientist that we all begin as. I mean, anybody who's spent time with kids knows they start as little scientists. Why is the sky blue? You know, why is the earth solid? Why is the sun yellow? I mean, they just want to know why. They're just investigating their environment. And that's what a scientist does. But as we teach kids and as we require them to understand the details more and more without having a parallel track where we are opening up the vistas that science reveals to us, the details, I think, just become a little bit too heavy for many kids. Some kids get excited about it. I did when I was a kid. I loved to do calculations. But, you know, that's not perhaps the normal kid. And for the normal kid, you got to keep them engaged with the big ideas at the same time as you're teaching the details. And that's what I think we really need to do.
Tell me, I'm curious again, why now this science festival? There does seem to be something, I mean, as you look at the last 8 years, this has been an administration that I think by all accounts, left or right, has been hostile to science. Where do you see the place of science now? I was particularly interested to learn that this kind of festival that you're putting together, in a way, has its precedence in the 1800s with people coming and watching. So I wonder if you can sort of connect what's happening now to what used to happen.
Well, certainly there was a time, and it was actually back in the 1800s, where when certain scientists would give a public lecture, it was an event. it was like, you know, President Clinton coming to town. People would come out to see this exploration of science. And indeed, as the 20th century progressed, there was a divergence. And I think it was the fault of the scientists who didn't adequately maintain that public presence and that link to the public. There became results, as you were mentioning, that were very difficult to understand, and there wasn't enough effort made to bring people along. And certainly in the last 8 years, to the first part of your question, science has really been marginalized in policy and decision-making in the public sphere. And an event like this, certainly on its own, can't, but I think it can help to initiate a shift where science becomes part and center of how we think about things in the world. So yes, we are linking up to the past, and we are trying to make amends, if you will, for what has happened in the last few years.
And can you understand why science has lost a bit of its luster as a top priority?
I think it's really the zeitgeist. It's really just the culture has been willing to let science come out every so often when it created a new gadget like the cell phone or a new piece of medical equipment without feeling the need or the pull to look under the hood of the car and see how it all works. And I understand that. I know how my car works, but I didn't always. And there are many people who just drive, and just driving can be fun. But what we've failed to do as scientists is to communicate that when you're driving that car and you know how it works, it's a different, deeper experience. So I really think the burden is upon scientists to take their work and make it part of their charge to bring it out to the public in a way that's understandable and accessible and exciting.
That certainly puts you on a certain team, though, within science, because what I've noticed is that within science you have a group of scientists who are somewhat hostile to the storytelling, to the communicating part of the job.
And then you have others. Less.
Do you think so?
Less. Yeah, you know, certainly, you know, Carl Sagan is famous for having to bear the burden of many colleagues who didn't really value what he was doing in bringing science to general audiences. He's watering it down, they would say. You know, he's somehow not really portraying what we do. And today, when we started this festival, actually say 2 years ago, we went, Tracy Day and I went to 25 Nobel laureates to come on board as the scientific advisors. All of them came on. All of them said, this is great. This is really important. Mm. And I think that really just shows a shift in the attitude of scientists, the recognition that if we're going to be up in the ivory tower doing our work, only talking to our colleagues, that's not going to be effective. You know, even from the standpoint of funding, what we do is paid for by the general public through tax dollars. The public is our boss, and we have to report back to our boss every so often about what we're doing. That's just how the world should be, and it's what we need to do.
Hmm. And this is the first one, right?
This is the first one, and we see this as an annual event that will take place every year in New York. We've already been contacted by people in other cities who want to have allied satellite festivals that would happen at the same time. So there's a real capacity here to have a national or even a global science week, and that would be a great thing.
Hmm. And you see it possibly traveling?
Well, I see it expanding. I always want to have one in New York. I mean, New York is so well known as a cultural capital, a financial capital, food capital, fashion, but it's really a science capital. But that's not what comes to mind when people hear New York, but it should. The universities we have here, the medical institutions, this is one of the richest places where science happens. And I really think that this festival has the capacity to lift up that underlying science and make it visible.
Hmm. As you look around this sort of the universe outside the festival into science as a whole, what is most exciting to you? I wonder if CERN, you know, the super collider that's about to go online. Talk to me about that or anything else that's
Yeah, CERN is a spectacularly fascinating experiment that's going to start taking place in roughly 2 months. It's a large atom smasher in colloquial terms. You know, it's a big 15-mile tunnel underground that will send protons circling around near the speed of light, slam into each other like 600 million collisions per second, you know, at 99.99% of the speed of light. And in the debris from those collisions, we can get clues to how matter is made up, perhaps even the origin of the universe, maybe even whether string theory is true. So there's a real chance that we are on the precipice of a brand new way of looking at the world that will come out of this new experiment.
Great. Well, I guess we should leave it there. I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm Jad Abumrad, and today for Leonard Lopate, I've been speaking with Brian Greene, physicist, mathematician, professor at Columbia, author, host of PBS's The Elegant Universe, and he's also helped put together the World Science Festival happening now in New York through June 1st. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.